Hello and welcome to the podcast. Support us by subscribing and sharing. You can support us on Patreon and you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Joining me as always is my co-host,
Gray.
And I'm your host, Adam. You're listening to Guilty Pleasure Cinema.
Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure. Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure. Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure Cinema.
So Craig, Commando. The 1985 movie, R-rated, hour and a half, not too bad.
Yeah, it is everything this podcast was built upon.
Yeah, nice, short and sweet.
Short, sweet, sexy, muscly man.
Definitely. So it's about a retired Special Forces colonel who tries to save his daughter, who was abducted by his former subordinates. And if you've never seen this movie before, roll trailer.
They hunted him down.
You know, Colonel, we went to a lot of trouble to find you.
They murdered his friends. And they took the only thing he would kill for.
If he wants your kid back, then you gotta cooperate. Right?
Wrong.
Now, somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna pay.
Do you think that he is going to give us any problems?
He'll do exactly as he's told.
Hasta luego, fellas.
You're a funny guy, Sully. That's why I'm going to kill you last.
Are you going to tell me what's going on or what?
No. Don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired. What are you doing?
Helping you get her back.
Remember, Sally, when I promised to kill you last?
That's right, Major. You did.
I lied.
If it's a mission no man can survive, he's the man for the job. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Commando.
Let's party.
So Craig, what do you remember of Commando, apart from the rippling muscles?
Apart from the rippling muscles, I'm pretty confident I've never seen this movie. I think it falls into that same category as Conan, where it's like, I've seen enough, I've seen the big bit.
You've seen the memes.
I've seen the memes.
And you know the quotes, you know the lines.
I do know the line needs some of the lines in this film. Wow. And they feature on, like, the 100 greatest movie lines that you're not supposed to love, or whatever.
Yeah, it's very quotable.
The 100 greatest comebacks, yeah. And but no, I was talking to a friend of the show, Rory, once, and he threw in a reference to a Conan movie. Conan's the other film of Schwarzenegger's I'm confident I've not seen. He threw in the reference. I had no idea what he was talking about. I was like, well, I will just be moving on with the conversation, at which point he just messaged me like, so you've not seen Conan, huh? I was like, nope, not even a little bit.
Well, he asked for the lamentation of the women or something like that.
Oh, we're talking pre-COVID times. I can't remember back that far.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like I can't remember shit after pre-COVID.
Well, if you want to find out what you do remember, Adam, it is time for our world-famous Simpsons trivia game.
Oh, yes. Oh, I even forgot this was coming up.
Look at that segue. As you know, last week, you got the question of who did Charles Montgomery Burns dress up as
yes,
when...
Yes, but I got half a point, didn't I?
Seymour's gonna you got half a point for the clue. The question this week, Adam, is at what price is Maggie scanned for at the beginning of every episode? Now, I will give you... If you're within $10, I'll give you the point. And if you can tell me the joke answer that they revealed it to be in the episode Spectacular, I'll give you half a point.
I'm just going to have to part, because I know that is like a joke answer. It's meant to be the price of something. Yeah, you go. It's a point to you, mate. What is it?
Point to me. So she scans for $847.63, which was in 1989 when the show started. That was the average cost of raising a child in America.
That's it, yeah.
I would have accepted a half point for NRA Forever, which is what they... I think it's on the 130th episode Spectacular or something. They're like,
What does Maggie scan for? It says NRA, Matt Groening, big fan of guns, or
is
something.
Is that the episode where it's like, which two famous or two favorite characters died? And it's
Bleeding Guns. The
they were never favorites.
And Bleeding Guns, he had his moments, but what was the shrink? What he was terrible. What was his name? Dr. Marvin Monroe.
Yes.
And I think that's the episode where they're like, we replaced Lisa at one point. And it's the kind of spoof idea that the Simpsons are real people. Anyway,
yeah, I think
that is not Commando.
That is not Commando. So, directed by Mark L. Lester. Where do we know that name from?
I feel like I'm going to take a punt and I'm going to say this guy has done this movie and then a whole load of trash.
You would be right. So probably the only notable one that I kind of vaguely even remember was Stephen King's Firestarter.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, respectable trash, but trash nonetheless.
Yeah, and by then the rest is trash. So this was meant
to... Target 5, Steven Seagal's Death Punch, or some shit like that, I bet.
Yeah, pretty much, man. And this was originally offered to John McTiernan, which you would definitely know the name of.
Oh, yeah, Die Hard's one and only.
That's right. So he turned it down because he was doing the Nomads, I believe, and sort of like the 1986, which was his feature debut.
Oh, okay, fair.
Yeah. And
now, just quickly, did McTiernan do Predator?
He did do Predator. Okay, so he turned down this movie of Commando, but then was later offered to do Arnold Schwarzenegger's second film with Fox, which was Predator 1987.
Nice.
But yeah, you would also know John McTiernan from Die Hard, as you said, but also The Last Action Hero.
Yes. So okay.
We've got a few writers here. We've got, if I can just quickly read that, we've got Jeff Lowell, producer of Marvel TV shows. He did Teen Wolf. He wrote that.
Okay.
And then his mate, Matthew Wiseman, who was also on Teen Wolf. The name that we would definitely be familiar with now is Stephen E. D'Souza.
Yeah, okay. That name rings... That's one of those names where it's like Dino De Laurentiis. Where I'm like, oh, okay, you've done some shit that I've seen. I can't tell you...
He's done a lot of shit.
Stephen D'Souza. Nah, I got Die Hard 2.
He was a writer on Die Hard. Did Tomb Raider, and of course, he did Street Fighter.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Talk about crappy movies.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's in this. Yep. He plays John Matrix. What a name.
Yeah, he does play John Matrix, doesn't he?
John Matrix.
And I think I spoke last week when I said, should be Johan.
He does mention in Commando, I believe, that where he's from. I think it's like East Germany or something like that.
Fair enough.
He's like, oh, when I was East Germany, rock and roll came along and everyone said it was shit or something like that.
I was in East Germany, I started the punk movement.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, best known. I think we even said this on the previous episode. His most iconic roles are probably like Terminator, Conan.
Yeah, and Predator. Hey, seen Prey?
No, I have not. I kind of feel like I've gone off. Prey is now Disney, isn't it?
Yes, it's a Disney Plus film. I think it's Stars, maybe.
I think it's
20th Century Studios, which obviously is now owned by Disney after the buyout.
Acquisition. I feel that they've like just sort of started steering in the wrong direction with a lot of their properties. I just feel that a lot of their products now just boring. Like I feel like I've marveled out, if you know what I mean. I've watched too many Marvel movies, too many Marvel TV shows.
I'm just bored of
most of the stuff, and I feel that lull has crept over onto Predator, unfortunately, or Prey.
I would give Prey a watch.
Oh yeah, it's Prey. Good.
It's the second best Predator movie. After all of the Predators and Alien versus Predator and Predators and the Predator, it's not as good as Predator.
Of course, but I don't think anything ever could be.
At the same, and here's what I'll say, is the first maybe 40 minutes I was like, all right, I see what this is doing, fine, whatever. And then that final hour, maybe 45 minutes, I was like, cool, great, this is everything I needed to see. Good job, movie.
Well, while you're hard at work editing this podcast, I'll put that on tonight. I'll give that a shout.
Okay.
I'll put my trust in you, Craig. For
it's not bad. That's what I'll give it.
Here we go. We're starting to backtrack already. It's all right.
Started by saying it's the second best Predator movie. I mean, there's not much. It's fine enough. No, it was a really good watch. That second half. The first half, I was like, fine. I kind of wish I didn't know it was a Predator movie.
Okay, yeah, I get it. Do you know what? Sometimes I wish, I can watch stuff without having any real familiarity with it. So, say, for example, I wish I could have watched the original Terminator and Terminator 2 back to back, and then not knowing that Arnie would be the good guy.
I wish I could watch the original Terminator and Terminator 2 back to back, and then that be the end of the Terminator franchise.
Ray Dawn Chong, what name? She plays Cindy. Nice, easy name to say there. Probably best known for Squeak in The Colour Purple.
I've never actually seen The Colour Purple.
Have you not? Wow, no. That's an alright movie as well.
It's the second best colour movie. Bad.
This is 1985. I was going to say, do you feel that this movie is quite progressive for having a sort of like a leading lady who's black?
1985.
Yeah.
I would say so. When Predator was after this, right?
Yes.
And the leading lady in that is not Caucasian.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say she's the leading lady. You know what I mean? She hasn't really got that much dialogue. She's not really in that many scenes. Do you know what I mean? She's not really an integral part of the plot.
Of Predator?
Of Predator, yeah. I would say.
Okay, but either way, I'd say, yeah, good call. John Matrix is his commando.
John Matrix. A favourite of you, Dan Hedaya.
Mr. Eyebrows.
That's exactly what I've got written here. So he's plays Aris. Probably best known for Usual Suspects.
Hold up. Sorry.
Arius.
What nationality does he play?
He plays some fucking... what country is he from? I got it written down here. Bear with me. He is from Valverde.
Right. So he is from a fake. That's the Die Hard 2 country.
Right. So this is Stephen E. D'Souza's thing, that if he needs a fake sort of South American country, he will say that they're from Valverde.
Yeah. Okay. So I just want to quickly call back. Oh, do you think this movie is progressive? No, because Dan Hedaya is playing a South American.
Oh, fair enough.
It's walking a fine line.
So famously, this is where the general's from in Die Hard 2?
Yes.
Yes. So then we have Vernon Wells
from Mad Max 2.
Ah, there we go. So I didn't know if you'd know that, because I didn't. I was shocked in a way, because it's so two very distinctive looks. He's like a Gary Oldman, just absolute chameleon. So if you've not seen Mad Max 2, or you might have, and you need reminding, he's the guy with the big red mohawk.
And he tries to catch the kid's boomerang and slices his fingers off.
Oh, no, that's the other dickhead.
Okay, right.
Yeah, he's the guy with the glasses. He's like, Lord Humongous.
No, yeah, Wes was one of my... I've seen Mad Max 2 many times.
Mm.
Wes was always I used to read Empire magazine because I thought it was cool. And they'd always be like, oh, the greatest on-screen villains, or the greatest on-screen villains you've never heard of. Blah, 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 blah. And they'd always be like, Wes was awesome. I'm like, yeah, no, Wes was fucking cool.
Yeah, just unhinged.
Just nuts. Is he nuts in this film?
He is. He's Vernon Wells. He described his look as Freddie Mercury on steroids in this movie. And two things here. I get the Freddie Mercury lookalike, but the on steroids, mate. He's fucking out of shape in this movie.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, juice up Freddie Mercury, he's gonna look out of shape, right?
The thing was, if you know, Vernon Wells wasn't the original actor that was going to play Bennett, his character in this. So he did an audition, but he lost it to a guy called Wings Hauser. I don't know if you know that name.
No.
Yeah, he's quite famous in American TV. But apparently on the first day of filming, Michael Lester fired Hauser. I couldn't find out exactly why, but then hired Wells in. But the reason why, they say the clothes were too tight because Wells was bigger than Hauser. But if I distinctly remember, like, watching this movie, the clothes that he wears are just fucking weird. It's like some grey string chainmail shit.
Right. Okay. And, like, so now this goes back. This goes now back to the, like, oh, it's the 100 greatest movie one-liner comebacks or whatever.
Oh yeah.
I now know exactly who you're talking about.
All right, here we go.
And that guy looks amazing.
So with this, yeah, he's got this. He's got this tash. He's got this. Sort of weird chainmail thing, and he has this absolute fixation on John Matrix on Schwarzenegger, to a point of a weird obsession. And it was Vernon Wells that came out a little while ago and said, "Yeah, oh yeah, I was playing gay."
Okay, so this is one of the things what I've heard about with the movie, which is the whole kind of Matt Damon The Departed thing.
Yeah,
but cool. Hey, good for him. Look forward to seeing the subtlety of the acting.
It's not really any subtlety, but you can kind of get this idea that, yeah, there's something not quite right with the relationship. Like, why the fuck does Bennett want to kill John Matrix so much? And, yeah, apparently that was part of his motivation. David Patrick Kelly.
Ooh, hello.
Yeah, yeah. So glad he plays Sully. So, obviously, we're best known from The Warriors.
Yeah.
Do you remember what his name was in Last Man Standing?
No. God.
He played Doyle. Doyle.
He's also in a movie. He's also in 48 Hours.
He is, I believe.
I've got a feeling he might have been in, like, maybe Dreamscape with Dennis Quaid.
You know when, as actors get a bit older, they kind of like merge into one another. I can't remember if he's in there's a zombie movie, and I'm wondering if it's Dennis Hopper.
Land of the Dead.
Is it Land of the Dead?
Dennis Hopper's in Land of the
Dead.
That is
Dennis Hopper.
But,
right.
But that is Johnny Legs is in that.
It is Johnny Legs. Yeah. Johnny Legs is in that. But yeah, you can imagine why, you know, you might think that that's a David Patrick Kelly as well. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, David Patrick Kelly is the white Johnny Legs. We all know this.
A very young Alyssa Milano is in this movie.
Oh, Charmed herself.
So she plays Jenny Matrix. Best known for Charmed. She was in Fear as well.
Fear.
That's Marky Mark. You know, where he does the old banging on the chest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Fear.
Never seen it, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's one of those weird things that, like, you kind of probably know movies more from jokes in other things like The Simpsons or
Always Sunny.
Always Sunny.
The jokes they put out helped me kind of find certain movies. Those little moments are nice.
And finally, we have Bill Duke, who plays Cook, probably best known as Mac from Predator. His weird little razor.
Oh.
Cutting off his head.
He is in, that Mel Gibson. He's in Payback.
I feel like he is. I feel like he's in some other movie.
Funny thing about that actor. He's in some
funny
other movie.
Funny thing about actors, they tend to do multiple roles.
He's one of the crooked cops in Payback that, I think he wears a bow tie. I think that's his thing. But I know exactly who you mean. Yeah, he's great. He's menacing. He's like Tony Todd.
Yeah, good shout. And a small cameo from Bill Paxton. And he plays he does have some lines in it. He basically monitors a radar. He's in it for all of like 5 seconds.
Okay.
So look out for that.
And was this before or after Terminator?
Oh, good shout. So he would have been in Terminator because this is 1985.
Right.
Terminator's happened. Fucking 100% sure. Oh, when I say 100% sure, I mean I'm 99% sure.
Fair enough. I don't know when the Terminator was at. Sure. I'm just trying to gauge like how big Paxton was, because this would have been pre-True... Because Paxton...
Yeah, 1984.
Paxton and Schwarzenegger, they've been in what? Like True Lies, Terminator, this.
Yeah,
I feel like there's another one.
Well. Apart from obviously things like Aliens, but you know, with Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, but with Schwarzenegger, there must be one other. But anyway, yeah, cool. Good for Paxton.
Yeah, good for you, dude. And God rest your soul. So
he was a treasure.
He was taken before his time. And with that, we do not have Mr. Old Roger Ebert giving us the lowdown. We have Gene Siskel, his counterpart.
Oh, hello. Okay.
Yeah, so he writes for the Chicago Tribune. gave the film a 2 out of 4 stars, wrote that Schwarzenegger plays his action scenes both with vengeance and a comic book laugh, but the mix never gels, adding that the concluding battle scenes are wimpy by comparison with the action in Rambo. All we see is half a dozen barracks blown up, shot from 4 different angles, which happens quite a lot in this movie. There's a lot of repeating footage and same explosion happening twice or something like that. But yeah, the big contender for this movie was Rambo. And there's a very famous line between Schwarzenegger and Bill Duke where they're having a fight in the motel, and Bill Duke says, "Hey, I'm going to kick your ass. I'm a Green Beret," or something like that. And Schwarzenegger turns around and says, "I eat Green Berets for breakfast."
And that is featured on the 100 Greatest Movie Comebacks.
I'm sure it is.
Supercut on YouTube.
That was apparently written as a dig towards Rambo, as Rambo was a Green Beret.
Oh.
Cool. Catty. Meow.
And, I mean, one of them's a good movie and the other one's Command, eh?
But you would be surprised how well this did. With what I've said there, you probably guessed that this movie did make a fairly tidy sum at the box office. But with a budget of $9 million, how much do you think it made back?
From the bits that I've seen and from what I know that Arnold Schwarzenegger exists within the movie, $65 million.
Not too far off. 57.5.
That sucks. I was going to say 57. Yeah, they changed it at the last
second. I heard it on the tip of your tongue.
The foot was going to come out. Fuck.
The foot and the cut. with that, should we jump on Chair Force One? Give this a whirl.
Yes. Before we do, right, you said about the action scenes and its barracks being blown up from 4 different angles and things like that. This now I'm like, maybe I have seen bits of this film because that rings a bell, but I find that a lot of these Schwarzenegger movies fall into a kind of similar brain space in my head where I'm like, I'm not holding on to too much information about the fight scenes. Now there is one key piece of information which I need to know as to whether or not I've seen this film before. Does he have a rocket launcher that has 4 barrels?
Yes.
In this one, or is that True Lies? That's
no,
this one?
This cool. is this one.
I've seen it. Yeah. Okay, I have seen the fight scenes of this film.
Awesome. All right, cool. Let's get Bird in the Air. 3, 2.
It is movie talk time.
So, back in the room. First thoughts?
This movie's terrible.
Yeah, it's...
This movie fucking sucks.
I would disagree. I think this movie's pretty awesome. But I think it's awesome for the right reasons. And I think that you think it sucks for the wrong reasons.
I don't get me wrong. Okay, let me... I'll embellish.
Yeah.
This movie ruled. I would watch it again in a heartbeat. I had to think about it 0%, and I had fun.
Yes, that's it.
But this movie fucking sucks.
I feel that this became a quintessential Arnold Schwarzenegger movie because I feel like it set up a kind of a bigger than, larger than life character, which Arnold Schwarzenegger is.
This movie set up McBain.
Yes, 100%. I would definitely. It's that kind of character, isn't it? It's the one-man army.
I mean, So I'm well.
Which obviously Rambo did beforehand, but this is but, to an effect.
No, come on now, you can't compare these two films.
Well, I mean, compare this to Rambo 2.
Can I just... All right, okay, can I... That's why I want to just quickly jump in and say, are we comparing it to First Blood or First Blood Part 2? Because if we're comparing it to First Blood Part 2, fair enough, but Rambo is, like, a really good movie.
I would say Rambo the first one, First Blood, fantastic. First Blood,
yeah.
Rambo 2, Out for Blood, also. It's the... It's a great movie. Obviously, the style and the substance behind the movie changes, but
yeah,
you know, it's just bringing in that larger than life character, and I feel that this is the, you know, when you talk about the sort of 80s sort of movies on steroids, and it were literally and figuratively,
yes.
This is the kind of start of that, I think. And this is why I feel that this movie has such a special place. Because it has just a huge amount of action.
Cocaine behind it?
Probably. And yeah. It's almost like, I would describe, it's like watching a comic book. Do you know what I mean? It's just it's not nitty and gritty. It's just like, I want to see someone do something superhuman and save the day.
It's like watching someone... in real life play out the game Soldier of Fortune.
Yeah, shout, actually. That's a great great game as well.
I love that game, yeah.
All right, so let's get down to the nitty-gritty then. And so the movie opens up.
So this film has like three scenes.
Yeah, I feel like there's... God, right, so really I was going to come at it like that. I was going to almost like it's almost like the linking of the chain of deaths. Mm. You know what I mean? So he's like, kills one guy, then everything leads up to killing the next guy. And then it just leads
short
up...
short scene, short scene, short scene.
Yeah.
20-minute scene. 20-minute scene. 20-minute scene. The ending.
Yeah, 100%. Pretty so easy to good. Follow.
I had such a great time watching this. I have so many things that I'm just like, no, that doesn't make sense. That's terrible. What the fuck is that face paint for? Who are you hiding from? Shit like that. But... I mean, Dan Hedaya. Oh, God, I need to get to Dan Hedaya. But I had so much fun. So it starts with Bill Duke going around and killing people.
Yeah, so we have the garbage guys. We have Bill Duke driving someone through a car dealership window.
Yeah,
so the shittest bait and switch with Van Wells' character Bennett, because they blow up the boat that he's on, but then he comes back and you're like, oh my god, it was a cross.
Oh my god,
it was a double cross. And you're like, well, you're like, that happened
this
like
is a shit five, MLN twist.
That happened like 5 seconds ago. So what a twist.
So we've got the first one is like some dude waking up in bed next to his hot wife, and being like, oh crap, the garbage.
Oh crap. Did they change the schedule?
He changed the schedule. Sure, movie, why not? They couldn't have just come on a Tuesday. He runs outside like, oh, sorry guys, I thought you missed me. And Bill Duke's, don't worry, we won't. Drill him with the fucking
machine. Oh yeah, they probably have about 50 shots in him just to make sure he's dead. It's like, damn, so right. Good.
And then we've got some dude who's like, oh yeah, you're really gonna need to buy the car with that toner on it or whatever.
Yeah, he keeps calling him brother as well, which I felt a bit uneasy about.
Yeah, so he deserves to
die. It's like, you know what I mean, brother? It's like, don't call me that.
And then Bill Duke's just like, you know what I like about this car? The price. Reverses it, and then this guy just is like, I did eat my Weetabix today. Maybe I can stop this car. Stat like roots himself to the floor and then just gets pile-drived through the glass.
See, by a car. I was kind of like in my head, I was like, would they have filled that car with gas and like, you know, like, or petrol? And then I was like, well, then how did they get it into the showroom? They obviously have to drive it in. And I was like,
yeah, so
already I feel like this movie's stumping me.
Obviously, I've last year filmed 13 cars, and we shot a lot of it in a Mini Cooper garage, in a Mini Cooper dealership, even.
Not the one in Wimbledon, by any chance?
No.
Not that one.
And all of those cars were fueled up because they had to be driven around the back so that the team who worked there could give them the old washdown and chamois. then drive them back around and have them in kind of showroom condition. So these cars are always, at least those cars, and I guess the cars in this movie, are all fuel ready. Maybe not that far, maybe a couple miles, but still enough for Bill Duke to get in a one-liner and then run this guy down. And then, he takes out the boat.
Yeah, he takes out the boat with the weirdest kind of look as well. It's just like so Bennett's going to work as a fisherman, whatever.
Sure.
And he kind of looks over and he sees, what's his face, David Patrick Kelly. And then he sees Cook as well. And he's just like, Cook just standing on the middle of a pier in a suit. You know, kind of like, hey, you don't stand out at all. And then blows up the fucking boat. But the thing I never really understand, and I don't think they ever really explain in this movie, is how he got off the boat. But then at the same time, it's like, why would he even need to show us this? Why couldn't you just go, they killed this dude? It's like, why did it have to go through the theatrics?
They could have just put a photo down and been like, oh, they killed Bennett, that guy that definitely wants to fuck you.
Yeah. So apparently Bennett's been kicked out of the original squad. So Matrix had some unit or something like some super soldier unit. And Bennett apparently liked killing too much. Yeah, I just find it so weird when they're like, all right, so you obviously are some crack team of like mercenaries and you help liberate this fictional country. And obviously people had to die. And you kind of see how Schwarzenegger's not too evasive from taking life. Do you know what I mean? And he's like, you liked killing a bit too much. And he's just like, I think everyone in this movie does. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, man. Even Schwarzenegger loves killing too much in this film. So then we get introduced to Mr. Muscle himself.
Oh, yeah, mate. I love this bit because the fucking weird-ass music kicks in. There's a guy called James Horner. He loves a bit of a steel drum, doesn't he?
Yeah, we didn't talk about this. James Horner. James Horner does the music for Bicentennial Man, starring Robin Williams. James Horner's amazing. Like, it's crazy that he did this movie. But cool. James Horner.
Yeah, I did. I like the way it just introduced John Matrix, because it's like boots, chainsaw,
muscles,
boots bat again.
Butt. Oh, no, wait.
More muscles, woods, cutting woods.
Yeah, it was. All I could think of was the scene in The Magnificent Seven where you meet Charles Bronson and he's cutting wood.
Yeah,
difference in subtlety.
But then it's like, and then you have Alyssa Milano sneak up on him. Lucky he doesn't do the old Mac and just like, don't sneak up on me. Like, it's just such a weird kind of.
It's so good. And you see the shadow creeping, and I always saw the shadow creeping. I was like, oh, that's definitely a child.
Yeah.
But the way the movie plays, I was like, oh, there's a shadow creeping up on him. And he's chopping wood. And, oh, there's the shadow. It's getting closer. And I'm like, well, fuck, this child's getting real close to Arnold Schwarzenegger. And then he spins, like, grabs her, and then he's like, hey, let's go fishing.
And that music has, like, that weird uplift, doesn't it? It's like, it comes to do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and then it's like, do-do-do-do-do, and it's like, oh, I've got a daughter. And
it's like, basically the end of a movie where it's like, we're not going to use dialogue, we're just going to use music to let you know that everything's okay. He gets given this like pristine life where he's living with his child in the mountains, fishing and hunting and probably smoking cigars and definitely watching videotape porn, because let's face it, he lives in the mountains.
Yeah, it's like, oh, but he's got a daughter, and they do karate and feed deer.
Oh, that's right. She does a kick and does
She does a hi-ya! And an elbow. And then, and then the movie, it's such a weird tone, because they go out, have ice cream, and she's fucking throwing it in his face, and they're like, And you know what I mean?
So
it's just like, and then it kind of kicks back up into the steel drum thing, like, especially around the fishing bit. It's like, this is intense.
Oh yeah, because you need to feel that intensity. So later on in the movie, when she's being intense, you're like, because we've seen her be intense already. She can fish and kick.
Yeah, it's a bit fucking all over the shop, I think, in the first opening minute.
And then you do, to this movie's absolute credit, you do get the, oh, well, when I was a boy in East Germany, we listened to music all the time. And it's like, oh, cool, you've acknowledged his accent.
I thought you would jump on the old soft bigotry where he's like, why don't they just call him Girl George?
Yeah, I just have to move past that. This movie did real well in many places, and we'll just move past that.
I was a bit like, oh yeah, fucking heterosexism at the kitchen table. Just takes me back to my childhood.
Classic dance for you.
But yeah, they never really explain what his sort of marital status is. Is he a widow? You know, where's the mum in all this?
I can only assume that he took the he was like, oh, me and our child are gonna go out for cigarettes, and then he fled to the mountains.
Yeah.
Because he's offered no like emotional guilt of like, oh, she's dead and I miss her.
Mm.
He's ready to hit Ray Dawn Chung hard when he meets her. At no point is the little girl is charmed like, oh, what about mummy? Is she in heaven? There's none of that nonsense.
You would have felt that, and they would have just acknowledged that.
But also, I mean, none of his friends, like his army buddies, are like, oh, sorry to hear about Jenny or whatever. It's never. So I'm confident he just took his baby and bailed.
Yeah, oh, it just feels like such a weird to have like such a, because obviously they're trying to set up the dad and daughter dynamic and how involved they are and how such a good father and how loving she is towards him, because you have the little fucking card on the fridge that says I love you, Dad.
Yeah.
Do you ever have that, Craig? Do you have any notes left on the fridge from your kids?
No, I don't. Actually, I 100% put charcoal drawn banana on the fridge the other day. It's like, no, that one's pretty good. But I'm very much in the camp of cool, you did it, but I'm not gonna like face false praise it. If it sucks, it sucks, and I go, cool, good job, and we move past it. But when it's good, that banana went on the fridge.
Oh, well done. All right. So then this is where we get the fucking colonel coming flying in via helicopter.
I mean, the movie rattles along at such a pace. The colonel comes along because Arnold Schwarzenegger, is a bat and can just hear airwaves.
Oh, you can smell as well.
I was going to get to it, but yes.
but
his
this is
senses
thing.
Rule.
But this is what I wanted to touch on, because it feels like this weird kind of like, what the fuck is going on with the family dynamic? Because when the helicopter flies in, she's like, oh, you said you weren't going to go away again. And you can imagine when he goes away on these fucking missions, he's away for like months at a time. So what the fuck she do by herself? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. I feel like they should have touched on this. I've got too many questions already.
And this is the sort of thing, like, so when I'm developing scripts with people and I ask these sorts of questions and they're like, oh, no, don't worry, no one will ever ask that. Yeah, they will. In a podcast in 40 years' time. In 40 years' time, someone's going to ask that question. You're going to look real stupid.
My mate Adam is going to just be asking me nonstop about this.
So the colonel comes along and he's like, oh, they're taking out your whole troop.
You've got enemies all over the world. South Americans, Russians, some other terrorists.
other countries. So we're going to leave two guys here to protect your daughter. And then he says to these guys, hey, go check the perimeter or something.
They do not.
They come back and like, no, all clear. And then one of the bad guys, like, I don't know, farts or something. And John Matrix is like,
danger's
coming. Get down.
She does. Like, that's the thing. Because when the guy fucking rolls in through the door, he's still alive. He's like, oh, fuck. And the guy's like, Arnie's like, oh, just stay here. And you're like, hang on a second. He's got no gun. He's not going to be able to defend himself.
Yeah.
You're just like, right, you chill here, buddy, by literally the fucking doormat.
But also, he doesn't chill there, because Schwarzenegger goes out, it's like, I need to get my rifle from the shed. And he gets it, which is cool. I love the shed with the rifles. That's great.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He climbs up the roof. He gets to his bedroom. And the guy, he's like, hey, chill out, is just there, dead in the window.
But so then he gives the old, how did you know? Oh, that was it. It was the stay downwind or something like that. The guy's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And it's like, can they smell? And it's like, well, I did.
Yes, I'm good enough. Ha ha ha.
Did you see the code on the safe door?
No, what was it?
It's like 1-3.
That's it.
Two buttons.
Sorry.
And it was like, I was watching it. I was like, I rewound. I was like, 1-3. It's like, open. It's like, wow.
That's like an Archer joke. Well, what's the password? Has anybody tried password? Oh, come on. So he gets in and some guy's like, we have your daughter, John. You're not going to kill us. Wrong.
For me, it's the best wrong that anyone's ever said, ever.
Yeah.
And it's like, wrong.
Yeah, oh, it's so good. It really sets up his character, his badassery, and it keeps that plot moving. Because now we don't need the, like, all right, all the kind of Dan Hedaya stuff now gets to come from Dan Hedaya of, like, we're going to send you here, you're going to kill this guy. If you don't, your daughter dies.
Oh, mate, you forgot the epic fucking
I'm coming back to it. But my point is that by having him just kill this faceless jamoke,
yeah,
it sets up his character, and still all of the stuff that that idiot was going to say, we now get from Dan Hedaya. Like, what an upgrade.
Yeah, so you kind of feel like there could have been... It's not necessarily that fallacy of the talking villain or anything like that, because he very much has said his thing. He's like, you do this, what do you think? And he's like, nope.
We have a daughter, you cannot get away. Wrong. So good. And then he's like, right, now those cars are driving away down a very windy mountain path.
Yes.
I, too, have a car, but they have taken the battery out.
So but that's the thing, when they open up that fucking hood, does it not look like there's never been a fucking engine in there? He just pulls out a load of wires and he's like,
oh, it 100% looks like tomorrow he was going to teach Charmed how to fix an engine. Like, it looks like tomorrow's project.
Literally, you know, do you have one of those fucking drawers or like little boxes in your, like under the bed that's just full of cables?
Yeah, of course. I'm a human person.
It's literally what he opens up the fucking hood for, and he's just like, oh, fuck, oh my.
All right, I forgot to put the battery in.
Oh, my fucking headphones.
Knotted. Oh, it's tied up with the USB cable. God damn it. I'm podcasting in 5 minutes. And then he's like, so he sees his car's winding down the hill, and he, in the ballerest of moves, is like, I could push my car down the winding path, but then I'd never catch them. All right, cross country it is. And how this works is, I mean, this is not the most stupid part of physics in this film. There is one very key part of physics in this film where I'm like, all right, movie, we're in fantasy world. This was dumb.
It's a dumb plan. And the way it's filmed as well, just for me, makes it seem even dumber. Because... Yeah. So he's going, right, I'm going to push this car down the fucking hill.
Yeah.
And it's going all over the fucking place. Oh. And Cook even mentions, he's like, oh, look at that guy. Oh, no brakes. So I assume they've cut the brakes on the fucking truck.
Which, my question is, why? You killed the engine.
Yeah, you're kind of thinking that. You're like, oh, okay.
Why did you double it?
No brakes.
Oh, I know John Matrix, and if he's going to do anything, it's going to be coming after us with no engine. Quick, cut the brakes.
Now,
Pop the tyres!
Yeah, exactly. 100, right, okay. So there's a few things already. Now, as he's coming down the road, and as you said, it's quite winding, right?
Yeah.
So as they're coming through, he's coming down the hill, like, you can't stop. So why don't you just stop? If you're driving, it's like, oh, just let him pass. He's going to fucking wind up down at the bottom of a cliff.
Absolutely. Just that. And that is what the, like, Naked Gun parody of this would be.
100%. It's mad watching it, because the other thing as well is that when he does kind of, like, fucking clip or miss him or something like that, they end up somehow further down the road.
And then
they're like, oh, he's still coming. And it's the same fucking footage.
The physics of this film are ridiculous. And the fact that he then gets out and is like, it's fine, I'm okay.
The thing explodes.
The thing explodes. But the thing is, like, it falls into a quarry. He then runs up the opposite bank.
Yeah.
And at no point are they like, he's climbing up the opposite bank, which is definitely higher than our eye line, so we've got a clear shot. Best open fire. They're just like, Best aim at the truck.
I know they want to take him alive and stuff like that, but he's barreling down, basically, let's just say, like a bomb on wheels.
Oh, yeah.
What's he hoping for? He's going to smash into the van, potentially the van that's got his fucking kid in it.
That's it. Potentially the van carrying Charmed. And
it's like, how do you know which is which? If you're barreling through, like, you're not going to know. So no. I don't get this already. He's a bit... So Maverick with the decision making already.
But Yeah, it's very Maverick, and by which we mean he's an idiot, not Top Gun Maverick. it's very Bad Boys. It's very like, oh, this shit always works sometimes. Mm. And it really sets the template for what this film is. So he then gets shot captured with a blow dart or something.
But this is the reveal of Bennett alive.
Yeah, which...
You
know
what I mean? It's like, Bennett, I thought you were dead. It's like, yeah, and for us as the audience, as I said in the previous bit, it's like, it's been like... It's been like 2 minutes.
It's been 2 minutes, but it's also been like, again, we saw him on the boat, and so if you know who he is, you can kind of just be like, oh, I swear I saw you die. We needed the general to hand a photo over.
Yeah, I think there was like, a bit of that.
Here is Bennett, he is dead. And then you see Bennett alive, and you're like, you motherfucker, or something. Like, something else, because this just doesn't cut the mustard.
I feel, yeah, because it's almost like, even though he's got the Freddie Mercury tash, I feel like it's like two quite distinctive looks. He's got that fisherman's beanie, kind of like workers.
Yeah. Oh, looking like Quint from Jaws. You know what I mean? Like, for sure.
And then he rocks up in his chainmail, and then you're like, you're like, strong look. I would think that if you weren't paying attention... Like, you would not know that these were the same two characters.
I kind of didn't. If I wasn't hit with the, like, oh, wait, is that fucking Wes from Mad Max 2? Like, wait. When that boat exploded, it was like, wait, was that Wes from Mad Max? Like, all right, the movie, I'm sure, will answer my question.
I feel that happened so quickly. That's the thing. I feel like that happened so quickly, and then there's this weird fucking reveal. And the bit I don't really get about it as well is, like, I feel like not that he fucks up the line, but it's a bit like, oh, you know, this... He's like, do you know what today is? It's like, this payday. And then it's like, nah, this should have been payback.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is payback.
Yeah, but that doesn't have the same ring to it. Do you know what day it is? Payback. No, it's...
It's like, do you know what today is? Today's payback. I thought that would have been a better line.
Yeah, all right. I'll give you... Oh, all right. Yeah, quick rewrite. Clickety-clack. I'll have it on your desk by Monday morning. Now, I can't stress enough, we are 5 minutes into this film and 50 minutes into this podcast.
Oh, there's just so much to talk about.
So much. So the whole idea is that politically incorrect Dan Hedaya with Captain Eyebrows wants John Matrix to travel to Valverde to assassinate a political dude.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And to do that, he's going to send one of his henchmen on a plane with Schwarzenegger...
Yeah.
So that he can't run, and they're going to keep his daughter, Schwarzenegger's daughter, in a house until he's done the job.
Yeah, and whole reason it's John Matrix is because this new president trusts John Matrix, because he apparently was nominated as the fucking best boy when he came to the revolution or something.
Oh, yeah,
like
he did a lot of grubbing during the revolution. And so, I mean, here we go. John Matrix gets on a plane.
Yes.
With a dude.
There's a couple of things with this. It's like, because when they get out the car and they're like kind of giving the whole like, right, you're going to get on the plane and you're going to fucking watch it and all this sort of stuff. It's going to be fucking foolproof.
Yeah. You're a funny guy, Sandy. I'll kill you last.
Yeah. But then it's when Bennett is like, oh, Schwarzenegger's like, how much are they paying you for this? And Bennett's like, huh. Pay me $100,000. I was like, is that it?
Yeah.
I was like, $100,000? Because he's like, what I didn't tell him was I would have done it for free. I was like, you practically are.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, what's
to be fair, it was 1985 money.
Yeah, but you're like, fucking still to do all this, to go through, like, for $100,000.
To fake your own... the cost of the boat that they blew up.
Well, it seems like, it's like, right, okay, not only the cost and then all this other fucking weird shit, it's like, you're putting your life on the line here. I was just thinking, like, you're trying to, you know, create a coup for this, you know, this fake country. So, like, $100,000, it's just like, it's such a lowball estimate. It's just like, fuck me.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I recently watched the film Megan.
Oh, is that the one with the robot?
Yeah. Pretty good, not amazing, not as good as Malignant, which was made by the same people.
Yeah, but it went from like an 18 down to like a PG or something.
It's aimed at teenagers, and that's fine. Yeah. It was fine enough. Now, in that film, they made Megan, the robot, and she's kind of a sentient android that gets that can like do anything. Honest to goodness, she can do anything. She's strong. She's smart. She learns.
Right.
She helps people. She.
It's like Short Circuit, basically.
But like Johnny Five really, but like really good.
Really? Oh, really good.
Oh, really good. Really, oh, really good. And okay. And she's retailing for $10,000.
Okay.
I mean, when you think that like a secondhand Land Rover is $20,000, that $10,000 is like, oh, cool. What you've done is now replaced all of the human workforce in existence, because Apple is just going to buy 50,000 of these, and boom, there you go. That they're going to be working. You know, McDonald's is going to buy it. Factories going to buy $10,000. Are you kidding me? But yeah, $100,000. Wow. He's got a lot of hatred for John Matrix and a lot of love.
Yeah. So
he gets on the plane. Yeah. John Matrix does, and he sat next to this guy, and he asks the stewardess for a pillow and a blanket.
Mm.
And he cracks this dude so hard in the head that he knocks him out, and then he breaks his neck.
Now, I feel like the flying elbow that Arnold Schwarzenegger gives him, it was so loud, I can't believe no one looked over. Because I feel like that, because you're at the back of the plane, so those seats aren't like really moving back. So I feel like if you're doing that, you are just absolutely smashing his head into a wall. How that does not make a sound. Just to even have a look over your shoulder.
Well, the thing is, everybody was focusing on the steward and stewardess, or the flight attendant, excuse me.
I think we all were focused on those flight attendants.
Damn. I'll be honest, I couldn't tell you what they looked like one bit, because I was too busy laughing at this film. So he kills him, and he's like, hey, don't wake my friend, he's dead.
He's dead tired, Craig. You fucked up the line, didn't you? Dead tired.
Mendoza. And then he Air Force Ones himself off this plane.
He does, doesn't he?
Yes. By getting an elevator down and cutting through the thing, bibbidi bobbidi boo, after the plane's taken off, landing in water somehow.
When he jumps out of the plane, the absolute ragdoll.
Oh, this film.
It's literally like, oh, I just love stuff like that. When it's just like, it's so clearly not a stuntman, not an actual body. It's just like, might as well just be a suitcase.
I absolutely respect it. If you're going to give me a mannequin or a ragdoll or a crash test dummy or whatever, I will always rate that over, we're going to CGI him falling or whatever.
Oh, yeah. It happens so much in this movie where you just, at the end, like, I'll point this out again if you ever watch it. When you're watching the barracks explode, they are basically...
No, you don't need to point it out. I saw it and laughed my head. I rewound
like window
it.
Mannequins.
I had so much joy just seeing this person kind of in a shot turn from a human to a still mannequin and then getting exploded. Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, because when we think of notorious incidents in movies where that's happened, probably the one that maybe we've covered is Broken Arrow, where John Travolta turns into a dummy.
Yeah.
But this is just on another level.
Oh, it was absolutely bananas. So he gets off the plane, and I can't stress enough, just happens to land in water.
Well, luckily, because when you're watching the runway, you're like...
There is not like, water in sight. He falls out of the air above New York and somehow lands in a New Orleans swamp.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's crazy.
It's also as well makes you wonder, like, this is obviously... You know, so far before 9/11 and all the sort of security stuff. But the way he jumps off, like hitches a ride on the fire truck and then climbs over a gate back into the airport, you're like, man, this is pretty lax.
Yeah. It feels, again, I mean, Simpsons. That guy's doing an idiot. Ah, leave him, Lou. Someone moving that fast doesn't need to be pulled over or whatever. Like, it feels like that guy's definitely desperate enough. We'll leave him be.
Yeah,
let's see how this plays out. So he follows, I wanted to call him David Hyde Pierce.
David Patrick Kelly, Sully.
Yes. Sully, he follows Sully. And Sully is just—he's just game for a bit of sexual harassment.
You know? Mate, it's fucking creepy as fuck. Which obviously you're trying to, but it's like it's a little bit like, All right, come on. So this is where we get introduced to Cindy, played by Ray Dawn Chong. It makes me feel a little bit like, that's a bit uncomfortable, like, because he lingers while she's on the phone and is like, hey, baby, sounds like you need a date or some shit like that. And she's like, fuck off, loser. But then she's walking to the car park. He kind of like staggers behind her and you're just like, oh, where's this going?
And she, she gets in the car and tells him to fuck off, and he's just like, leave.
It's like, I didn't realise.
And
we've all been there. We've all been in a nightclub where we try chatting up a chick, she's not interested, and you turn around to your mates, it's like, yeah, sorry, mate, lesbian. And it's just like, you tried, you shot your shit, and, you know, didn't pay off.
I can't say we've all been there, but sure, a lot of us have been there, I guess. John Matrix.
We're just going to start calling all the people different. David High Pierce.
John Cusack comes in, he rips the door off of her car.
He rips the seat out, which I don't really understand why.
Why did he rip the seat out? Why? But what purpose did that serve?
It's for I can only assume that it's for him to be lower in the car so he doesn't stand out. But then when you watch the scenes driving, he's still taller than her. It's like, fucking hell, you're sitting out of it like fucking like Noddy. It's just crazy.
That was insane. But in ripping the seat out, he definitely got rid of, and I've been setting up for a little while, he gets rid of the seatbelt. And hold on to that for a scene that's coming up
soon. Oh, I know exactly. I've got that in my notes.
So, they follow Sully and they get to a shopping mall. Because
it's not just any shopping mall, Craig. It's the Galleria.
The Galleria, a.k.a. Terminator 2.
Exactly the same place.
And B, I got strong Jingle All The Way vibes from this scene.
Yeah, quite colourful. Is it Christmas? Yeah, I don't think it's Christmas.
It's not Christmas. It might be Christmas in Valverde. But the idea of him like having to go up the escalator to catch the guy and like invading the police and then getting into a fight and then like 17 police officers jumping him, but he just stands up and flies them all off. I was like,
How many fucking police officers as well?
Yeah.
Are in this shopping mall.
There was a sale on donuts and Twinkies. I don't know.
You're like, all right, security guards, yeah, cool, awesome. But these are all armed police officers.
Yeah, it was a bit crazy and very Jingle All The Way. But then Cindy, he's like, hey, just follow that guy, make him think you want a date. We need to follow him.
Mm.
And she is just like, I could do that.
How about
crazy
I don't
who
do that?
Ripped the seat out of my car, or I'm gonna tell on you to the police.
Yeah, it's such a weird dynamic between the two of them, and it almost feels like some of her lines never really, like, land. You know, when he's like, she says something like, oh, I've only just met you, and I want you to die as well already, and he's just like, nice. And she rocks into that fucking, like, TGI Fridays or whatever it is, and sees, like, the worst, like, underhanded deal going on. It's like there's a table in the middle of this fucking bar, and it's almost might as well be a like spotlight or searchlight on it.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, here's some money under the table.
Yeah. And now, so Stephen E. D'Souza, did he have a hand in Die Hard 2?
Yes. This
scene sets up. Like, I watched Michael Mann's Thief the other day. There's loads of things in that. Rock up in Heat, and you were like, oh, okay, you were doing it kind of budget there, so it was good in Heat. And this is the thing with this film versus Die Hard 2, that deal is very much what happens at the very beginning of Die Hard 2, that John McClane's like, oh shit, bad stuff's about to go down, I best get involved. And it's cool. It was nice to see the writer kind of using the same scenes and being like, but now I'm going to do it with a good budget.
Yeah, and this is where this movie like gets dated quite in a good way, like, because he spots Matrix as he comes out to try and chat up Cindy, and he goes, oh, fuck. And the thing is as well, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger is trying to be quite coy by hiding behind the pillar. It's like the fucking biggest fucking dude, like, even the fair play to the police officers, because they're like, they even describe it as like, fucking hell, this guy is huge. Like,
yeah.
And he's like, yeah, how's he trying to be fucking coy, but like basically hiding behind a lamppost? And then, but it's when Sully, David Patrick Kelly's character, sees Matrix, and he's like,
and
oh, fuck.
He just starts fucking capping people.
Well, he does, but the thing which I was thinking about with the dating is he asks for a quarter. He's like, he starts absolutely rustling through Cindy's pockets. He's like, give me a fucking quarter. I need to make a phone call.
Yeah.
And he runs off into the little phone booth. And you're just like, you're watching that back now. And you're like, there's no way you could do that these days. You know what I mean? No. There's like that sort of urgency and that kind of desperation about for him to get away to make this phone call to notify people. Because it's like, well, you know,
I've got to call Dan today, and then I was watching. It's like, you're right. It has been a while since I've shoulder pressed a fucking phone box, and lifts him up and throws him down, and that for me should have been the end of this chase.
Yeah, or he does a little swing onto the lift and the elevator.
He does a little swing on the elevator, and then it turns into a car chase.
It does. Now, the weird thing about this is that when Cindy's had this weird change of heart now for some weird reason and pushes that cop down to, I don't know, break his neck on the stairs. Yeah. And then she has enough time to run out of the Galleria to stop Matrix in her car. And she's like, "Hey, stop, let me get in."
Yeah.
Why? Like, I don't get... that's the one bit in this movie where it's like, where's this turnaround come from Cindy? And...
the movie was written that way.
Yeah, 100%. And she gets in the car, and Arnold Schwarzenegger's like, yeah, fine, I'll stop while this guy I desperately need to track is getting away. But yeah, hop in. They carry on driving, and this is where I was saying her dialogue just doesn't seem to land or anything like that. She's like, oh, you're going to tell me what's going on? He's like, no. And she's like, no. Oh my God! And it's just like, oh, this is like the worst day I've ever had in my fucking life. Look, it's like,
yeah.
Why do you get into the fucking
characters,
car?
Her character's not particularly well written. It's very much kicking the cat. We need to inject kind of not quite a romance to it, but still.
Well, apparently there was a sex scene that was filmed but was not obviously put in the movie, as they felt like that the dynamic between the characters just wasn't there or whatever, or it would be quite distracting. If you could say that, that would be distracting for this movie. But
So we get into this car chase, and here comes the stupidest part of this film. And essentially, driving, Sully careers off the road, and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Cindy, bam, crash into a lamppost at conservatively 60 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Zero seatbelts, zero airbags, zero seats, or 50% seats.
Yeah, that's the big one. It's like
they just kind of like stand up, like, oh, tough break.
I guess I didn't see that lamppost.
Yeah.
She should have been like John Travolta flying through the fucking windshield. And...
Oh my God, yes, that should have been it. Or any...
torpedoed.
It should have been. Or like, is it Deadpool maybe, where someone gets flown through the window and goes in slow motion? Something like that. Anyway.
Ralph Wiggum coming through the window. So.
Should have been toast. But instead, we get the, hey Sully, you remember when I told you I'd kill you last? I lied.
Yeah, it's probably, that's I think the best bit in this.
Oh, take a bow, Stephen E. D'Souza and team. Take a bow.
Now, again, the funny thing for me is the dummy just let go. It's just like we're screaming down the cliff. It's like, ah! And you're just looking at it. You're like, oh, Christ, that looks so shit.
Yeah, that's not great.
Apparently, if I remember correctly, Mark L. Ester asked Arnold Schwarzenegger to hold up Sully or the David Patrick Kelly by himself. It's like, oh, can you just dangle him over the fucking cliff?
What?
Yeah. And it's just like, Arnold Schwarzenegger was like, no.
And I can't believe this guy didn't make another movie. I am surprised.
Yeah, rumour is. And this has one of, if not the, probably one of the most famous continuity errors in movies. The damage on the car like disappears. And it's not like subtle. You know what I mean? It's just like, hang on, where the fuck is it? Like, the car's literally just crashed.
That'll buffer out. So then it becomes, I mean, honest to goodness, we're going to need to rattle through some of this because it's crazy.
Well, this is it. So, like, they find the key on Sully that says the sunspot or whatever fucking hotel it is. Yeah. And it's
go
like,
to
right.
the hotel room, and then we get a fist fight between Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bill Duke that is potentially more boring, and this is saying something, than the fight scene between Keith David and Rowdy Roddy Piper in They Live. Like, that scene is everyone, oh, what a great fight scene. No, it's really dull because you had these two idiots that weren't fight choreographers just, you know, choreograph it, and so it's just them slugging the shit out of each other.
It doesn't help with Cindy's interjection. It's like, what is this, all this macho bullshit? Oh, these guys eat too much red meat.
yeah
you're just like, oh, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, she was kind of talking like Spider-Man does in the Spider-Man animated series, where he's like, I'm gonna look to the camera and say something funny.
So apparently why that's it doesn't probably hit as much is because her reactions were filmed separately. Do you know what I mean? Right. So she wasn't reacting to anything that was going on. It was just like straight up like, and this happened.
Okay, yeah. that's bad. And very obvious.
We do get some 80s tits, though. We get crashing through the door.
Oh, we get the obligatory, it's the 80s, where are my breasts thing, which
and,
again, Tango
and
Tango
are
cash.
There? There's some big, round... fake titties.
But that happens in Tango and Cash, it happens in Die Hard, it happens in this, like,
I want to see Dong. I want to see this is, you know, that's what I want as a kid. You know what I mean, when I'm watching this shit, it's like when I'm watching RoboCop, or I'm watching, I just, when I'm watching Total Recall,
I'm here to see
free tits
as a kid. It was like, okay, action, cool, is there nudity? And that was a thing when I was a kid, where I was like, I knew it.
Yeah, because there's no internet.
A sick child, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And there was no like, this is how I get my rocks off.
But then we get...
by pausing.
I'm going to suggest... rewind. Pause it. No, rewind again. 3, 2, pause it. Oh, God damn it. Okay, right, God damn it. Okay. Rewind. Pause it. Okay, there it is. Pause.
Nice
stay
static
there.
Juttery tits.
Tracking going up and down. but then this is where we get the worst one-liner of the movie. And it is the worst one-liner of the movie.
Gone.
Fuck you, asshole. Kicks him through wall so he splits his throat open on jagged glass. Fuck you, asshole.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, writers. All right, movie. I don't think that's good. I don't think that's anywhere near as good as you think.
I don't know. I quite like it. I think it's, yeah, just a bit of back and forth thing. But yeah, and then Bill Duke dies. And yeah. But this is one of those things where it's just like, what were we expecting anyway? So you beat shit out of him and you're going to talk. And the thing with Sully was never going to give up where everything was. And he was just like, and he's like, oh, I can take you there. And he's like, you don't need to. I know where the key is. That's why I'm going to kill you. And you're like, all right, well, you just killed Bill Duke now. So he just so happens to have a receipt for some fuel pumping station in his car that's a bit of a, might be a bit of a stretch, a bit of a reach. That's where things are happening. But
This film is a bit of a stretch and a bit of a reach, mostly to hit the 90-minute mark. But
well, because there's a few things that do line up. So they find out that the that this is a plane being fueled up, and this is where this plane is being fueled up for somewhere. But it turns out to be the military coop, because this is where all the fucking tanks and armoury stuff is. It's really weird and confusing. It's like, why is that here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna have to correct you and just say it's coup. But
what am I saying?
You're saying coup.
That's it. So, coup de grace.
Coup de grace. So yeah, they have to get on the plane, and I mean, honestly, we need to just trickle them away because I'm gonna have to edit out otherwise. But like, he gets on the he's like, yo, you had like pilot lessons once upon a time.
Oh, yeah. You know, she's trying to get a pilot's license, isn't she? That's how she knows that this is the fuel depot place.
Sure. And then he's like, you go fly the plane. So you're like, oh, okay, movie, you're giving her as a character some kind of gravitas here. Cool.
Yeah.
Because you're just going to shoot the fucking guys as they're coming. That's great.
Yeah.
And then he shoots the guys as they're coming, and then she's like, all right, I've got the plane started. And he's like, cool, I'll take over. And it's like, wait, what? She's flying the plane. She's doing a great job. Because,
but is she?
I mean, they get away.
Right, well, because you've kind of jumped over a little bit of the gun in the store and stuff like that, but that's not really that important, I don't think. Where they break into this weird fucking place that has a whole like vault full of like military grades.
Yeah, I forgot about this scene.
It is a little bit of those. Hang on, like the one thing I wondered a little bit about this is like, did he know this shop? Like, was it one of the guys that you know the guy that was the got shot by the garbage disposal?
Yeah.
Did he maybe own this gun store? Yeah, or something like that?
They needed that line.
Yeah, did he? Oh, this is my old buddy's place. He died. You know, he's in my unit, so I know that he's got a safe somewhere in here, and that's how he knows how to fiddle the fucking buttons.
That's it. It needed a line at the very beginning where he's like, John, where the colonel's like, John, all your team is dead. He's like, what? Even Kelleher or something? And then you're just walking up to his gun floor or something. It's like Kelleher's place. And, you know, something like that. You're like, oh, Kelleher. Okay, because that's a memorable enough name that I don't need any more explanation now. That's just a unique enough name.
And something he magically like spawns a fucking tractor out of nowhere to plow through the middle of the, you know, the middle of the store and things like that. And
clack, cocaine.
Where is this? This is LA, isn't it?
Oh, God. Is it? Probably.
It is LA, because that's where the Galleria is.
Okay, then yes.
All right, let's say, so this is LA. It's dead. It's empty. I thought this is meant to be like one of the biggest hustling, bustling cities.
New York, the city that never sleeps, and LA, the city that loves a nap at 5 PM.
Yeah, it's just like you're driving a digger through a fucking shop, and literally there's no one else about, and you're like, okay. But then obviously all the police turn up, arrest him, and then this is for Cindy now to have her moment of firing off the rocket launcher.
Right, just before we get to that, because you mentioned the Galleria and it made me think of Terminator, and of course when you think of Terminator, you think of one very specific line.
Which is?
I'll be back.
Yes. Oh, he does say that, doesn't he?
And that gets mentioned in this film.
Ah, yes, he does say that, yeah.
He might as well, like, wink at the camera.
Yeah, did you hear me say that?
Which I'm pretty sure he does in one of the Expendables movies.
Oh, yeah, 100% in the Expendables, yeah. I mean,
So, yeah, Cindy has the four-barrel rocket launcher, yay!
Now, this is a good continuity, as unfortunately, you know, this movie doesn't have a lot of it, and the fact that she fires off two rockets, so when he then comes to use it, he's only got two rockets left.
Yeah, that was cool. That was well thought out.
Yeah,
that was
just like, okay, cool. Yeah, nice.
That was done. When the writers were doing their job, but the bag was running out, so they were actually focusing.
And she needs to get him out of the police wagon. And with that, she fires off the rocket launcher. Now, you're kind of thinking to yourself, if he ends up dying in that explosion, now what? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It is very much a roll the dice.
But that's the thing, it's the physics of this movie. It's like, this is last action hero, like, lore, isn't it? It's like, he cannot be harmed. He can do no wrong, in a sense. Like, you know, if he was to jump on something, there would be a platform there. If he was to dive off a plane, there's going to be a marsh. There. You know what I mean? It's always, he's...
yeah.
He's got plot armor, hasn't he? In a sense,
he has so much plot armor, and it works. You know, it works. They get on the. Yeah, you know, she frees him, but yeah, it's stupid. His character is stupid, and this is what I said at the beginning. This movie fucking sucks. It gets away with it because it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm. If this was released now and was The Rock, awful movie. Everyone would feel
in a way, if this was The Rock now as well, it'd be too overly meta.
It would have to be the last action hero.
Yeah, it would have to be some genre like that, because I feel like if this was to be made seriously, I feel that it would lose its charm in a way.
It would, and in many ways that whole kind of machismo thing died with Die Hard.
Yeah.
And this is probably one of the last good, like, you know, honest to goodness films where it's like, this guy can do anything. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's it. Don't ask questions. Shut up, Affleck.
Do not. Right. And then, so they fly to this island.
Yeah.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger's like, hey, I need to row my boat. Bye. And she just leaves the movie, right? She never comes back, or she's there.
She's there at the end. Yeah, yeah. But she, as far as the plot's concerned, yeah.
Yeah, as far as anything happens, he becomes bloody his character from the beginning of Twins.
Oh, mate, yeah, I had that written down. I was like, yeah. I'm pretty sure this is like, this scene is literally from Twins.
He's very much a guy that's like, I did this well in one movie, I'm going to do it in all my movies now. I'll be back, you better believe it's going to get said. That Jingle All The Way scene was taken from this film, etc. So he gets to the island, and we get the, like, I'm going to zip up and put a knife in and lock and load and clickety-clack.
I do, yeah. I do love the camo, because it is literally, like, putting the camera over himself, but it's like it's broad daylight and he's not exactly being discreet.
I'm gonna bring up a poster, the poster of the of his face, like, because I think his face is the film poster, right? I'm gonna bring up the image. Okay, I've got it here. That's a good one. He's holding the four rocket launcher.
Yeah.
How many black stripes do you think he has on his face?
Well, I think he has like one or two, doesn't he?
He has three. Most of his face is uncovered. His arms are uncovered, and like, he's the most obvious looking man you've ever seen.
Yeah, the thing with camo is there is a way to do camo. I don't know if you're ever aware or you did like any sort of like cadets or anything like that where you might have had.
I didn't, but I can tell you right now that the way to do camo is not this.
Yeah, so one of the two things. One is to actually take shine off your face. So, and this is why even if you have like a really dark complexion, like if you're black or something like that, you still actually have to use camos to take that sort of that shine off, because the shine helps define the shape of the face.
Right.
And the other thing is as well is to distort that sort of shape, and it's to make sure that, you know, you don't have anything that's distinctive for the eyes to track. So that's why, you know, if you do any sort of like camouflage, especially as well, you're thinking of like ghillie suits and things like that, it's meant to break almost like straight lines in a way. It's meant to break that sort of shape of a human.
Sure.
So when you put it all over your glistening like bodybuilder-esque body, I don't think you're doing what you think it's... Yeah, I don't think it's doing what you think it's doing.
No, it's definitely not. And it was, again, silly. It was just silly. But, you know, we needed that cool scene of him being like, okay, I'm ready. And he goes in and... I mean, we just get the end of the movie. This is it. We're at the finale.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Everyone dies, basically. Everyone dies. Blown up, shot to pieces. There are some funny ones, like when the grenade falls next to Arnold Schwarzenegger and launches him across the garden.
Yeah, that was cool. I mean, Alyssa Milano does a whole thing of trying to escape.
He gives a shit.
You know, it's just it needed to be in there to get this runtime up. Bennett's sent to kill her, she's gone, and then we get a scene that reminded me of the scene in Con Air where he's like, yo, put the bunny back in the box. You know, they're down in the pipes, John Matrix is out of bullets and Bennett's got him pinned, and John Matrix is like, wouldn't you rather just, I don't know, fuck me, I mean stab me with your knife instead?
because the whole thing, like the few times it bounces back to this mansion, and where like, you know, when Bennett's walking through and one of let's just call them Colombians, the soldiers, was like, hey, you ever cut a girl's, little girl's neck? It goes, it's like smooth as butter. And he's like, shut the fuck up. And then he talks to Dan Hedaya. He's like, you're pissant soldiers, blah, blah, blah. Do you know what? I laugh at him. Do you know what? Matrix would have laughed at him. Yeah, me and Matrix.
Yeah.
You know, like, and he just keeps everything that he says. Yeah, Matrix would do that as well. And
this one time. Yeah, my good buddy, John Matrix. Matrix this, Matrix that.
And then you're just like, yeah, this guy's just obsessed.
Oh, yeah. Let me talk about the one time that John Matrix and I were wet and we realised that the only way to stay warm was to preserve
body heat. It'd be like listening to Rory talk about Worcestershire. Yeah, I mean, this one time, yeah, I used to play for Worcestershire, and he's just like, oh, fucking hell. All right, you've got one story.
Now, that story's gone into liquidation now.
It has.
He saves the girl. He kicks Bennett. Oh, we got the great, like, fire furnace bit.
Yeah, so it's this whole, like, fight kicks off in a weird way, because you're right, like, so he finds Bennett downstairs with the little girl, not in that way, but
not in that way
but he gets shot in the arm. Now, when he gets shot in the arm, it feels like he has to crawl like 5 meters to behind the pillar. Yeah. And the whole time, you can see Bennett in shot holding the gun at him, waiting for him to crawl behind the pillar, and you're like,
yeah.
And he's like, oh, why didn't you just...
Well, that's because Bennett loves him so much.
And he's just like, why didn't you poke your head around the corner? I could just put a bullet between your eyes. He's like, dude, you had the chance.
Yeah, absolutely.
He had, like, fucking good minute on the clock to fucking shoot him in the back.
If you're going to shoot Bennett, shoot. Don't talk.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh, well, yeah, wouldn't you want to just stick it in me? Like,
yeah, come on, Bennett, stick it in me. I know you want to.
Fucking feel on the blade. And he's just like, oh, this is getting a bit hot in here.
Yeah, so again, I bring up the Matt Damon in The Departed thing, and this is very much a Matt Damon in The Departed thing, but cranked up to 11 and on steroids.
Oh, 100%, because the way Bennett's like sort of like grinning and like kind of salivating at the mouth, like the prospects of like tangling with Matrix.
It's like he's just like, he's like Anthony Hopkins talking about fine Chianti, just like.
He's like, yes, I do want to fucking stab you.
And then he like, yeah, he holds his face to a furnace or something, or he like burns his hand on a furnace or something. And
mate, when he gets kicked into the electric fence.
Oh, the electric fence, which by the way, Tango and Cash.
Yeah, and he gets like juiced up from it, doesn't he? He's like, woo! Like sort of like Marv from fucking Home Alone.
Marv from Home Alone, or Black Panther, when he gets like his energy suit is supposed to like absorb energy and charges him up on some nonsense. And then T'Challa, that's it. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger's final one, which is like, hey, let off some steam, and kicks him through the steam pipe.
Well, no, he picks up a fucking just pipe and then just fucking javelins through a person into a fucking like metal tank or pipe or something like that, and then all the steam comes through, and you're just like, yeah, let off some steam, Bennett. And you're just like, damn. And not only damn, because fucking Alyssa Milano was watching the whole fucking scene.
Oh yeah, she's traumatized. But also, why would Arnold Schwarzenegger not throwing for East Germany in the Olympics at the javelin?
Oh, 100%, yeah, just like, what a waste. But yeah, like 100% traumatized.
But don't worry, because
witness a guy getting paled.
He carries her off into the ocean to live their new life undersea or something. No, Cindy comes back with the plane.
Yeah, Cindy does come back with the plane. But this is that weird interaction with the colonel at the end. He's like, did you leave anything for us? Only the bodies. And he's like, okay, John, I want you back in the unit, sort of thing. He's like, no, I'm done. And he's like, till the next time. And it's like, wink, wink, sequel. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger's like, no. It's like, yeah, for the sequel, not coming back for this one. I'm done.
I mean, yeah, it's
real... literally like, you know, like the $8.9 million just ticked over to 9. And it's just like, all right, well, fucking wrap it up, lads. It's a quiet day.
So, yeah, look, this movie rules.
Yeah, 100%.
It's cool, this movie, what it is.
It's stupid, but it's good stupid.
It's all the right thing. Sorry, it's all the wrong things done in the right way.
Yeah, I know we've been shitting on it, but fuck, man. I love this movie.
I love that. And it's on Disney Plus. I can't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it's Fox.
Pardon?
It's Fox, isn't it?
Yeah, not anymore. 20th Century Studios. It's just never going to look right. Great movie. Great. I would honestly say probably the last good and serious, oh look, he's indestructible action film.
I don't know. I feel like there's maybe a few more. I'm trying to think off the top of my head, but I mean, yeah, I mean, apart from all the Rambo movies, I mean, well, if you're talking about indestructible, I mean, we could talk about Die Hard.
But again, not good. Not good. I watched Die Hard and I'm like...
Oh, I get what you're saying. Oh, this is the only good one. Yeah,
this is the only good one. Even, I mean, you could argue Rambo First Blood Part 2. But compared to Rambo, that sucks. Because this is standalone and it's got nothing to compare to. It's just like, oh, okay, we're having fun.
Yeah.
And maybe Hard Target. That's actually... You know what? Hard Target. Hard Target's probably the last, honest to goodness, machismo action film where the guy's indestructible.
Yeah, it's actually it's a weird film as well, because you know when we were saying about Arnie's iconic roles, and you instantly jump to Terminator and Conan and things like that. I feel like Commando is maybe even more up there, because it's such an iconic look of the vest and the very little camo that he's got spread over his body, and the big fuck off. Is it like the M60? He's like shooting with a little bandolier over his chest, and he's just kind of like, yeah, actually, this, I think this is up there. Like, and I know we say this is up there in that movie, but in terms of iconic, and him holding a big fucking 4-pod missile launcher and stuff like that, it's just like, if you just see a screenshot of that, even though he's like got his top off, and just like, oh, that's Commando, that's like fucking badass fucking movie.
That's it. It's an absolutely badass movie. Don't take it seriously. Kind of just be like, oh, cool. It's nonsense, it's gibberish. Don't think about it. Do not think about it, and you'll have a great time.
100%.
Last thing I'll say, the movie has no message, it has no purpose, it has no point, it has nothing that it wants to say.
Don't kidnap people's daughters.
Shit happens, and it was great.
And don't kidnap Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter. This is like the original Taken.
This is the original Taken, but even in Taken, he's not this badass.
No.
But this has been Adam McCraig's Guilty Pleasure Cinema. That was our episode on Commando. I think we both agree this movie rules. If you would like to hear about any other movie we talked about, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, Adam McCraig's GPC. We are on Spotify and iTunes, Adam McCraig's Guilty Pleasure Cinema. We are on Patreon. And next week we will be talking about another movie. Don't tell us we won't, because we will. We just haven't decided what it is yet.
No, we have not. It's a mystery.
It is a mystery. So until then, Adam, it has been a pleasure.
It has been a pleasure.
Bye bye.
We are watching a movie that we are talking about. So sit back and relax, and it's time to talk about it. Talk about it. Maybe get some popcorn, or maybe some snacks. We are watching a movie that we're gonna be a talking about.
The thing of Shy, again, you got to try and do something to get him out of the paddy wagon, and it's maybe not use that word. Maybe that's a racist word.
Maybe.
Let me just say it. Cut.
It is movie talk time.